This is Unspoiled, covering The Dark Tower, Book 2, The Drawing of the Three, Chapter 3, Shuffle. In this chapter, these guys do not seem to get along as well as I used to think. I really hope that they work it out. I like you together, guys. Maybe they need couples therapy. Welcome to Unspoiled.
Therapy edition.
Yes. I mean, I feel like anybody that Eddie's buddies with is going to need couples therapy because Eddie's just such a hot mess. But, you know, I really want these two to make it. I think you kids are going to make it. So, I just was, you know, understood, obviously, why Eddie is so fucking angry. Mm-hmm. But it didn't keep me from wanting to be like, oh, Eddie, stop. Like, it's for your own good, man. I know it sucks, but it really is. Things were terrible for you. The last thing that you did was hold on to your brother's head.
Yeah.
Just don't be in that world anymore. Many people, after going through something like that, would love to be able to leave their world. You know? But...
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to, given the heroin addict thing, the fact that he's coming up with withdrawals... You know, he's experiencing withdrawals currently, and, you know, it's between that and the trauma and the world traveling. It's mm-hmm. not hard to imagine that his state of mind is somewhat frayed.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, so I get it. I just wish that, I wish, because Roland is so clear throughout some of this as to what Eddie's going through, that he would talk with him a little bit more about it. But he just, like, lets him stew. And I always get frustrated when characters don't talk to each other. And it's not like that's out of character. The most frustrating thing is when characters that would normally talk to each other just don't for the sake of the plot. And that's not what was happening here. But I definitely was like, Roland, come on. Oh, dude. Yeah. I think I'm here to ruin things. Miles was like, I loved it so much. And I was like, okay, here's the 11 things that I really got mad about. And he was like, oh, you're right. But you still loved it. It's fine.
You're right. That doesn't make it not a fucking amazing movie.
Yeah. I mean, so. I try to acknowledge that also.
Yeah.
But it's hard for me to get past certain things when that was sort of what I was looking for. But that's not what this podcast is. This is the Dark Tower podcast.
That's an SCP, Natasha.
Guys. I'm Natasha.
I'm Miles, and I make weird Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy references.
What was it that you just said?
It's an SCP.
What's that?
Somebody else's problem.
Oh, nice. I haven't read that book in a long time. God, I remember when I started it, and I was just blown away by how brilliant I thought it was at the time. I don't know if I would still feel that way now, but I feel confident that it would stand the test of time.
I think it does.
So, yeah, this is written in a really unusual way, also. King does this shuffle sort of narrative device to mm-hmm. indicate the passage of time and the sort of weird haze and flutter of images that happens when you're, like, semi-conscious. Which I think is really effective. I liked it a lot.
It's good.
And he also goes into present tense. A few times, which is interesting also. Present tense is one of those things that I feel can be really poorly used by the wrong person. It can come across as gimmicky and sort of lazy if it's in the wrong hands. But it feels quite seamless here because of the fact that the whole narrative is so disjointed from him and his fever and everything that it makes a lot of sense for it to jump into different tenses. So
present tense present tense is a thing that I usually notice right away
mm-hmm.
because I have a pretty tremendous problem with it. it just really, like, I still haven't read The Hunger Games.
Okay. That was actually going to be my example of a book that does it well.
I'm sure it does. I have no doubt. But I started reading The Hunger Games, and I realized that it was in first-person present tense, and I just, like, I'm like, I can't. I don't like it. That's not how I like to consume stories. That's just me. That's not a commentary on the work. Mm-hmm. It's just how I personally don't like consuming stories. And for a second, just a minute ago, when you were like, it shifted into present tense, I was like, wait, it does?
Mm-hmm.
And I looked back and I was like, oh yeah, there it is. Like, in between, there's the first bit where they kind of like, you know, it's like Roland asked Eddie about the time before, about the last week or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go through that week kind of in flashback, which is the present tense part.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get back to, you know, the regular narrative. But I didn't even notice. Like, I didn't even think about the fact that it was in present tense because it works that well. It's that seamless.
Yeah, well, and I don't feel like it's fair to compare it to something like Hunger Games where you're starting a brand new book and you're hyper-aware.
Oh, no. It's not.
But, you know, I really was impressed with how well it was done because I had the same reaction when I started Hunger Games. I sort of stopped when I realized and was like, oh, come on. Like, I really rolled my eyes pretty hard.
Me too.
And I read, like, the first chapter, I was like, okay, I'm going to give you a chance, but I'm still not 100% on this. And then by the end of the first book, I was like, oh, there is no way this could have been written in anything other than present tense. It just 100% made so much sense by the time I was done. So I really respect the choice, but I completely know what you're talking about with that because I was very reticent and really just kind of side-eyeing the writer. Like, did you have to, though?
Mm-hmm.
But once I was done, I was like, no, you did. You did have to. My mistake. So props to her. But yeah, this goes back and forth, and the fact that it is so seamless is just pretty impressive. Yeah. So... Yeah, he says something at the end about how, you know, how long it has been. And Eddie said, less than a week, that's all I know for sure. How do you know that? A week's worth of pills was all I had to give you. After that, you were going to have to do the one thing or the other on your own. Get well or die? Right. I am really happy that Eddie is like, hey, maybe these things taste like lobster.
Right?
Thank
I know.
You. Yes.
It's brilliant.
I really, like, as soon as he's, like, some pale meat, and I was like, oh, shit, they're eating those things, and I bet they're delicious.
Well, the beautiful thing
about ocean-dwelling crustaceans? Yum.
Right? Yeah. I'm not even a huge fan of seafood, and that sounds good.
Yeah.
I like lobster. Lobster's good shit. But I love in this book, and in this section in particular, how we find out that Eddie has been told certain things about his life mm-hmm. and who he is.
Yep.
And I can relate to this a lot. You know what I mean? I think a lot of us can.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you get – it's either the media or it's the people in your immediate family or it's your friends. You know, everybody builds the story mm-hmm. of who they are, and that may or may not have anything to do with who you actually are. It's just – what you and everyone else believes about you.
Mm-hmm.
So for Eddie, it's this whole, you know, oh, he's a junkie. He's, you know, the whole story he tells about Henry and his mom, right, is that, like, you know, Henry has to look out for him and
sacrifice,
you
know, everything for him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And but what we find out is that in real life, Eddie is resourceful. He's smart.
Mm-hmm.
I love the bit, and this is skipping way ahead, but I love the bit where he builds the thing to drag Roland along.
Yep.
And Roland thinks for a second, just like kind of like amusedly, like, ah, Court would have bust his ear for making this stupid contraption. And then he's like, no, actually, Court might have been really on board with this because he did something.
Instead of just sitting on his haunches, bewailing his fate.
Yeah.
I
don't know. I just really like how... I love the character of Eddie, and I think the shuffle chapter here is just really kind of all about him and
it's
who
really
he is.
Heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And I mean, this is a theme that King has touched on before in just a moment with one of the goons who thinks that he's not trustworthy because everybody has decided that and he's heard it for so long. So King is clearly a fan of this idea of people believing what everyone else says about them.
Right.
Which, I mean, it's sort of impossible to avoid after a point, no matter how strong of will you are, unless you are in total denial. If enough people start to say the same thing about you, you start to be like, oh, well, shit, maybe they have a point.
Yeah.
And the fact that Henry is such a master manipulator.
Oh, my God, I know.
It's so gross to read about. And, oh, my God, but do we not know this person in life?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has had this person in their lives. And it really, it depends on your own personality, where that person wound up in respect to you. Like, I am the kind of person who has zero fucking tolerance. And I can be very heartless about it and just be like, oh, yeah, I'll remember all the things you did for me. Bye! And slam the door in their face. But I 100% understand why there are some people who don't have that kind of ability to cut themselves off and let the guilt eat at them. It's frustrating for me to watch because I have seen it with friends before, especially in bad relationships, where a dude has been utterly terrible, and yet by the end of the conversation, he's somehow convinced her that it was her fault. But it's, you know, it's just who you are determines how you react to that person, and I can't blame people who internalize that and believe it. It's just that people just have a very distinctly different response to that depending on who they are. And I don't think they can even help it, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, I appreciate that on your part because I am not the same as you in that regard. I don't start believing these things about myself necessarily. I don't think I do anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But I will tolerate it. You know, I will stick around. You know what I mean?
Okay.
And this has been the case, you know, I've basically known one person really like Henry and one person who is kind of like this,
mm-hmm.
you know, not to the same degree and not, you know, and in both cases it wasn't even, I don't know, I don't want to go into too much detail, we don't need to, but the point of the matter is the first person, it took me years to finally be like, okay, you're done.
Mm-hmm.
And we are done.
Yep.
And the second person is still a major part of my life. So, you know, and will continue to be.
Yeah, so, I mean, like, they're...
Because I'm very invested in that person.
You have to kind of, like, come to terms, I think, with whether or not you're going to be okay with it. Because if you keep trying to act like, no, they're changing, it's different. It's like right. It's this false hope and letdown and hope and letdown. But if you just start to be like, this is just them and I can't expect anything else, I think that can help. It's just, you know, once you get to that place, it's like, well, are you willing to tolerate that though? Because that sounds terrible. But some people, it's just not really possible to completely cut them out of your lives for whatever reason. So, or just, you know, would feel cruel. Because even when people are master manipulators, it doesn't necessarily mean they're not worthy of pity or some sort of, I don't know the help. Word I'm looking for. I guess so, yeah. It's just, you know, I just get grossed out by it. Because it feels very transparent to me, and it's always kind of startling when people don't realize that that's what's going on. Because it looks so... Maybe it's just because I kind of grew up seeing this behavior a lot in family. So I got very sensitive to it when I saw it starting to happen. And so when friends didn't get that that was what was going on, I was like, how do you not see this? It's so obvious.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that Eddie has grown up with that being enforced by his mother is like, it's doom. You can't, when your mom for your whole life is telling you this thing, it's, you have to be a very special kind of person to avoid believing that, especially if your mother was otherwise not a terrible person. If your mom was awful, then you start to, you know, grow up and be like, maybe she was full of shit. But if she was generally a decent mom, it's really hard to, like, shake that that might fundamentally be true. So.
Yeah.
I was actually talking about this with Owen the other day because, like, I didn't. I got really big into performing, whether it be like plays or singing or whatever, when I was in high school. But I didn't actually start doing that until like the very last year in middle school. And I didn't realize it until the other day, but I had been going to audition for a talent show when I was in like fifth grade. And I still remember that I told my mom that I was going to audition, and she kind of like discouraged me from doing it.
Uh-huh.
And was like, are you sure you want to do that? Because I mean, you're going to be really nervous and you might not remember all the words. And like, I know that she was trying to protect me from freaking out because she didn't understand the kind of personality I had, because I, as a kid, was very shy. Now that sounds hilarious, but I was. And so she thought that it was just going to be me going up on stage and just having a panic attack and running away. And being, like, really bummed about that for a while. But I wound up not auditioning. And I remember my music teacher, when I had told him I was going to audition, he was excited because in class I was a good singer. And when I told him that I wasn't going to do it, he kept pestering me and trying to get me to audition. And I thought at the time that he felt bad for me and was, like, trying to make me feel better. It was this weird thing that I had. And it took me a while to realize that, like, my mom just straight up didn't know who I was yet. And she thought she did because she was my mom.
Right.
But she really didn't. And I finally did do a talent show in eighth grade. And my mom came up to me after I was done singing, and her face was, like, white. And she was like, I didn't even know you could do that. And I remember being like, no, you didn't. And I was kind of pissed. But, you know, who you are is just such a weird, fluid thing. And I couldn't even blame her, you know? It was just frustrating, I guess. But
so much of who you are is who you're trying to be.
For sure.
That's the other thing about it, is that, like, you know, so I used to get serious complexes that I was, like, a total, like, fraud in terms of my identity.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm like, oh, my God, I'm trying so hard to be this person, and I'm actually this other shitty person. And after a while, I was like, no, wait, I've been trying so hard to be this person, and in the process, I kind of am, so mm-hmm. Yay.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. It was like, it's, I think intent is a huge part of that. And I think,
sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, I think that's the other thing we're struggling, or Eddie is struggling with in these mm-hmm. chapters, is what does he want?
Mm-hmm.
Who does he want to be? And he's going really back and forth, partially because of the chemicals, but, you know.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, like, I think a big part of what shapes people's identities, too, is what they're afraid of being. And, like, what you just said.
Yeah, that's for
you
sure.
You know, being like, oh, I don't want to be this person, so I'm going to try and be this, and then eventually you just are.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's definitely part of, I just realized it, like, a few months ago, that I take on so much because I'm paranoid that I'm lazy. Really, like, deep fear of being lazy. So right. I just pile on more than I can handle in order to, like, reassure myself that I couldn't possibly be. But it's, you know, born out of being really afraid of that. And that's what's going on with Eddie. It's like he managed to become such a resourceful, observant, smart, like, street smart kind of person because he constantly felt guilty about Henry having to do all the heavy lifting, which he obviously wasn't even doing.
Yeah.
He just made Eddie feel like he was doing that. So
it's reacting to stimuli that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, but because it, you know, just because the stimuli is only there in your head, it still affects you.
It doesn't make it any less real to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the reason that we have movies like The Matrix, that idea. You know what I mean? It's like, well, you know, what's in your mind is actually the most real thing to you, regardless of whether or not it exists in the physical world, right?
Oh, my God.
So
I had this argument the other day because there was somebody I was talking about in medicine. Women are given sedatives instead of painkillers when men are given painkillers. Mm-hmm. That our pain is often just not taken very seriously by medical professionals. And somebody was trying to justify and say, like, well, women have a lower pain threshold, so it's not as bad. And I'm like, do you hear yourself? Our threshold is lower. That doesn't mean that the pain is less to us. It means that we have less tolerance, and it's very real for us. What are you even saying?
Right.
So it's just like, yeah, your perception is everything.
I know women with some pretty high thresholds for pain, too.
Well, I mean, once our body will release hormones during certain times of month to up the threshold quite a bit.
Yeah.
But normal and, like, everyday situations, we tend to have a much lower threshold. So, which honestly shocked me. I expected when I researched it that women were going to have the higher threshold, and we do not. But anyway, I think that part of why it can seem like we have a higher threshold is because we're trained to not make a big fuss about it, because nobody's going to listen to us anyway.
That's true.
So, yeah, Eddie is taking care of Roland.
Oh, yeah, there's a book.
And he is making lobster meat, and he, like, the gunslinger isn't even, like, thinking about what it is. He's just like, oh, it smells so good. And, the meat is more than not bad. The meat is delicious. He manages three pieces, and then everything blurs into a new shuffle. Effort to speak, but all he can do is whisper. And he says, north, up the beach. How do you know? Just know, he whispers. Eddie looks at him. You're crazy, he says. Gunslinger smiles and tries to black out, but Eddie slaps him hard. Roland's blue eyes fly open, and for a moment they are so alive and electric, Eddie looks uneasy.
It's like, oh shit.
I love that so much.
Yeah.
He's I wanted you awake, not that awake. Go back
not
to sleep,
prepared
buddy.
Prepared to kill me.
So he's waking him up, though, to give him his medicine. Because I thought he was just waking him up to, like, talk to him more. But he's actually, you know, still caring for him.
Mm-hmm.
And
Eddie's banter this whole time.
He is
I love
so
his
angry.
Dialogue.
Oh, my God. He's so pissed.
It's time for you to take your dope or whatever he says.
Yep.
Son says it is anyway, I guess. I was never no Boy Scout, so I don't know for sure. But I guess it's close enough for government work.
Oh, my God.
Open wide, Roland. Open wide for Dr. Eddie,
you
kidnapping
fuck.
I
love later when he's just like, who are you? Eddie screams at him. Your destiny, Eddie, the gunslinger whispers. Why don't you just eat shit and die, Eddie asks him. A fair question, Eddie.
Because he's at this point, Eddie's still doing the withdrawal thing in a big way.
Oh, yeah.
And Roland is like, you can, what does he say? Stand and maybe live, or die on your knees with your head down and the stink of your own armpits in your nose. Nothing to me.
Real specific. Stink of your own armpits. Okay. Well, yeah. All right.
He's like, I don't give a fuck. Caw, bitch.
Caw, caw. And, oh, man, his realization of... suddenly, in an utter blast of horror, Roland realizes what the whitish pink chunks of meat Eddie had been feeding him have been. He cannot speak. Revulsion robs him of what little voice he had managed. What did you think I was doing? He nearly snarls, calling Red Lobster for takeout. I have never been to a Red Lobster. Ooh, I want to go there.
Seriously?
Yeah. I'm just craving some shellfish now.
So good. Mm.
That's where Beyonce takes her boo, and he fucks her real good, according to her song.
Okay.
Yeah, did you hear about that?
No, I wasn't aware of that.
Oh, my God.
I'm not up on the latest Beyonce news.
When she released Formation, that's one of the lines. I can't remember exactly how it goes, but it's like, he fucks me good, I take his ass to Red Lobster. And I guess Red Lobster sales, like, skyrocketed over the next week after that song came out. And they were just like, hey, thanks, babe. Really appreciate it.
That's great.
She has power, man. That is serious. You just have one kind of throwaway line in a song alter, like, the stock prices of a restaurant. That's serious.
That's pretty awesome, I will say.
And Roland says they're poison. But, you know, obviously... things can have like venom and not be poisonous to eat.
That's what Eddie says. So are rattlesnakes, man. People still eat them.
Which I'm like, do they have rattlesnakes here? Probably. They seem to have every terrifying thing. And I like to think maybe I got one of the ones that ate Jack. I like to think I'm eating that dink. It like eases my mind, you know? One of them ate part of me too, the gunslinger husks out. Two fingers, one toe. That's also cool. Eddie keeps smiling. I love it.
And Gunslinger's like, fuck yourself.
Yep.
And he's like, Roland shows a flash of spirit. Maybe you ain't gonna die after all. Darling, I think that's marvelous.
Oh my god, I just realized what that's from. Isn't that like an SNL skit from like the 80s?
I have no idea.
Because when I was a little kid, my parents used to say it all the time, and I would go, they would go, marvelous, and they would try and get me to say it, and I would go, ma. And that was like as far as I could get.
Aww.
Oh my god, I just remembered that. How funny. I think it was a skit. I gotta look that up later. okay, so then, why the fuck do you keep trying so hard to keep alive on this scuzzy beach? Tower, he mouths. You and your fucking tower, Eddie says, and starts to turn away. So yeah, I feel you on that, Eddie. And then, I just know, so why do you waste my time and energy asking me foolish questions? I love that he says later about how Eddie asks all these questions and how it doesn't even occur to Roland to ask these questions. He just doesn't have the, you know, I guess he doesn't have the imagination for speculation. He's like, this is how it is, the end. We don't need to know of any other options. Who cares?
He doesn't have that curiosity. We've talked about it before about Roland. He doesn't have that imagination.
And Eddie sings Hey Jude.
Oh, yeah, that's great. And, where did you hear that song, Eddie? Did I sing it?
I love that. And where are we?
Before he can ask anything, shuffle.
And then we go to them actually having, like, a more awake conversation. And Eddie goes and hunts some Dada Chick Jada Chums.
Lobstrosities.
And he says, maybe you could walk for a while tomorrow. I'll tell you very frankly, my friend, dragging you is the pits and the shits. And then they have this kind of, well, first there's the amazing, he's like, well, why didn't you pull the trigger? Because Eddie mentions that he was thinking about killing himself.
Yeah.
And Eddie's response is pure gold. Well, what if it wasn't an actual, like, live bullet? Then I was going to have shit my pants, and you can't get the smell out of your pants if you don't wash them right away. So I wasn't going to mess with that, which actually makes Roland laugh.
Yeah.
And then I guess maybe because you needed me, if I'd killed myself, you would have died. Later on, after you're really on your feet again, I may, like, re-examine my options. And he starts away, pauses, and looks back again at Roland. Sometimes you really don't understand me, do you? No, the gunslinger whispers. Sometimes I don't. Then I'll elucidate. There are people who need people to need them. The reason you don't understand is because you're not one of those people. You'd use me and then toss me away like a paper bag if that's what it came down to. God fucked you, my friend. You're just smart enough so it would hurt you to do that, and just hard enough so you'd go ahead and do it anyway. You wouldn't be able to help yourself. If I was lying on the beach there and screaming for help, you'd walk over me if I was between you and your goddamn tower. Isn't that pretty close to the truth?
Oh my god, it's nailed exactly him to the truth.
Wall! Damn!
Just, like, saw right through him.
Yeah. Man.
I mean, it's exactly like... It's the story of Jake right there.
100%, yeah.
Just smart enough so that it would hurt you to do it, and just hard enough so you'd go ahead and do it anyway.
Yep.
Yep.
Man, I wonder what kind of person I am. I don't want to think about it. I don't want to know. Would I have let Jake fall? I don't think so. But God, who knows?
Well, I mean, you know... Think of it not as the tower, as...
Red Lobster.
I don't know. Would you let a child fall for Red Lobster?
Yeah, I would. Yeah. Fuck that child. I want that... my fucking Bay biscuits.
Red Lobster, this mystical place to which you've never been, but you've only heard about, that apparently lies at the center of all things because Beyonce.
Can we please make that the new, like... the new metaphor for the tower for me every time that we need to totally make an analogy down. It's going to be Red Lobster, please.
Totally down.
That gives me way more sympathy for him than the tower. This, like, gotta esoteric find the
fucking
idea.
Red Lobster, Natasha.
And I'll be like, oh, yeah, you're right. No, that's fine. But
now,
then...
now you need to never go to Red Lobster until we finish.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah. No, I can't do that, Miles.
No, it's too late. It's over. You can't go there until we finish the series.
Damn it, what's another famous seafood place we could pick? So then Roland is a douche.
Yeah.
Which war was it, Roland whispers. What? The one where you got your sense of nobility and purpose shot off. Eddie recoils as if Roland has reached out and slapped him. I'm going to go get some water, he says shortly. He turns away, but not before Roland has seen the last red rays of sunset reflected on his wet cheeks. That was uncalled for.
Yeah, I don't get this. Like, what is the impetus for him saying that?
Because he's pissed that this guy read him like a fucking book.
And so he's basically saying something.
He's lashing out.
It has nothing to do with the previous conversation, but it does happen to be true. Right? Like, he doesn't have any sense of nobility or purpose, really. Eddie doesn't.
I think that he
Or at least he doesn't think he does.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I think he knows what his insecurity is, and is just like, oh, let me pick on that one thing that you hate about yourself. Like, you know, people who are good at hurting people know where to zero in on, and he just does it because he's pissed. That's all.
Yeah, because, I mean, there's nothing in this previous conversation. Eddie is being, like, he's being very lucid. He's being very rational.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's like, you don't fucking get me, so here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what I know about you, and that's how I'm different. This is how I'm different from you. And Roland, I think the other possibility is that Roland is like, holy shit, you're not like me. You have no sense of nobility or purpose.
I don't think so.
But I don't think so either. I think he's just trying to be a dick.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
There is no logical progression from the end of Eddie's statement to what Roland says.
Because
the thing that he says right before that is, you're a tower junkie.
Yes.
And that's fucking the case.
That is so funny. When he said that, I was just like, oh. When a junkie calls you a junkie, you know you a junkie.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so this, I just was so pissed at Roland. What a dick fucking move.
Really is.
You know, I was just so mad. It was so unnecessary and so purposefully hurtful and so like petty, you know? And I really think it's because Roland is used to being the one that can read the room and that can tell who people are.
Right.
And he has not only just been read like a book, but he has also been at this guy's mercy.
Yeah.
You know?
He spent the last week entirely helpless.
Yeah.
And he doesn't like being that.
So I think that it's a combination of just being like, oh, really? You think you're so good at this that you know me? Well, bitch. And then he just pulls out his little, I'm trying to think of, a little scalpel, you know?
Yeah.
Because things like this are, it's a very focused hit.
Yeah, or almost like a taser, you know?
Yeah. Like. So
3 days pass.
Yep.
And, Roland is starting to get better.
Steadily recovering. And the red lines go away finally. And
Eddie
Eddie starts talking.
Yeah. And Roland thinks to himself, like, I already know all this, but I'll let you say it because you need to say it.
Mm-hmm.
Which, maybe it's just because of the conversation we've just been having, but I don't entirely buy.
I feel like it's more like, what else are we going to do?
Yeah, I know. I mean, that, I don't entirely buy that Roland already knows what he's going to say, or at least that he already understands. But I think maybe, with Eddie's, like, little speech before, that was when, like, despite what he said something to get back at him, but Roland's not dumb.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's a smart guy. So he probably, you know, he's hearing Eddie talking about how he needs people to need him, and something might have clicked, and he's like, oh, I've seen this before. I know this behavior.
Yeah, that was more what I felt was the case, was that, you know, listen, I've seen people like you before. And I know what leads to this, and it's always the same.
God.
Because, yeah, being codependent is, you know, it's a pretty common thing, honestly.
I just realized that maybe it wasn't, Maybe he didn't say, you know, ask him which war he got a sense of nobility and purpose shot off because he was mad that Eddie read him. Maybe it was because in that moment he understood who Eddie was and is trying to make him someone else.
So like, you mean that he's like, you could have been great, what the fuck happened?
Yeah, he's guilting him into like, you know, if he mocks the kid for not having any sense of nobility and purpose, he will start wanting to have a sense of nobility and a purpose. And in this way, once he gets that, he will be a better tool for me. Does that make sense?
It feels a little bit too complex for Roland, but...
Okay, well, fair enough. Fair enough.
I mean, maybe? If I'm going to try and be charitable, I could say that it's him almost being, like, complimentary.
Mm-hmm.
And being like, obviously you're a smart person with self-awareness and something happened to you, so what
right,
the fuck?
Right, right, right.
But, you know, I don't know.
But I don't get why you... I mean, the only... Yeah, I don't know. I don't get why you say that in that right then. Like, it is a dick move.
Yeah, exactly.
But now that we're getting Eddie's story, it's like, okay, you mm-hmm. know, maybe he did get it right away. I don't know. But Eddie's story is pretty fucked up.
Yeah. Yeah. And he talks about this one particular... Excuse me, hiccup.
Well, he says the gist was simple. Eddie believed he had stolen Henry's life.
Mm-hmm.
Or he believed he had stolen his brother's life. Henry also believed this.
Yeah. That's the part that's the most upsetting for me. Is that Henry is obviously an amazing manipulator. But it's not like he doesn't actually think what he's doing is, like, warranted.
Right.
Because he really does. He has had the same mother that Eddie had telling him how amazing and sacrificing and selfless he is his whole fucking life. So, naturally, he would feel like he was a damn saint. Like, of course, how do you avoid feeling that?
Yeah.
So, I felt... That, for me, was, like, the worst part, is, like, if somebody's a manipulator and they know that's what they're doing, you can at least, like, have some contempt for them. But if they're not even, like, aware of how fucked up this whole thing is, then you just have to feel sorry for them, too, and just be, like, angry. And that anger doesn't have any direction. There's nobody to be angry at, you know? Which, there is nothing I hate more than a situation where nobody is at blame. Because then you just have all of this emotion that you just have to, like, hold on to or direct in a productive manner. Which, who the fuck knows how to do that most of the time, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah, there's a point when he says something about how Court used to say a weak man is a man who lays blame. And I was like, that I'm really fucking weak, because laying blame is my favorite thing to try and do. And it's like such a human thing. And it's something that, as angry as I get about people being xenophobic, Islamophobic, racist, sexist, whatever, I understand that human impulse to want a focal point for all of this rage. It's just, you need to develop beyond that. And many people do not.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, but I just understand it at a fundamental level. It's just super childish. But you know, it's something that is very comforting. Having a bad guy. I mean, it doesn't get much more reassuring than feeling like there's two sides, the good side and the bad side. It's very simple and direct and easy and nice.
I mean, that's why that's the basis for pretty much all of our escapism.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yep.
That's how it works. We like to believe that there are heroes and there are villains, and we are the heroes, and the things that are bad in our life can be blamed on the villains.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly none of it is our fault. No.
Yeah. That was always something that bothered me as a kid, because my dad, you know, tried to make me a Christian. And I always wanted to be like, I always just got irritated with the idea that we could just say, like, the devil did this and that. Because I was like, that's just sort of taking the blame off of people. And I remember talking about it with my father and him saying, no, people are still responsible for their choices. And I'm like, but he's walking around, like, tempting you. And he's like, yeah, and it's your responsibility to not fall for it. And I'm like, that's just fucked up. Like, I was just like, the whole idea of it, basically, like, a system in which there is a figure solely responsible for trying to, like, lure you off the righteous path. I was just like, that's just not fair.
Yeah.
You know? But once I got older, I started to be like, oh no, but that's, again, super comforting. So you start to get it. And I just feel really bad for both of them because Henry is a hot fucking mess. And it's the reason for him becoming an addict is after going to Nam and getting his fucking leg blasted, he comes back and gets some drugs after being in surgery and he gets hooked.
Well, even before that, though, Eddie tells the story about the time they stole a car.
Mm-hmm.
And he was, like, super scared and he wanted to leave, but Eddie was being an asshole. So when Eddie was like, So when Henry was like, you know, do you think that cop over there saw us? Eddie was like, yes, even though he knew they hadn't.
Mm-hmm.
And so they go back to Brooklyn and he says that, you know, Eddie says that he was scared as I was that day. Scared her, really, because he thought the cop saw us and I knew he didn't. That's why he ran. But he came back because Eddie was like locked in the car. Eddie was having trouble getting out because he was like 8.
Right.
And he came back. That's the important part. He came back. He was always scared, but he came back. And then Roland thought it would have been better for Eddie, maybe better for both of them in the long run, if Henry had just kept showing his heels that day or on one of the others. But people like Henry never did. People like Henry always came back because people like Henry did know how to use. First they changed trust into need. Then they changed need into a drug. And once that was done, they – what was Eddie's word for it? Push. Yes. They pushed it.
Mm-hmm.
So and then he goes to Nam and he gets even more fucked.
Yep.
So but he was always – he had that thing. He had that you know, that – like you said, he was always manipulative.
Yeah.
Even if he wasn't doing it for sadistic reasons, he was still doing it.
Yeah.
And he you know, needed Eddie as much, if not more so, you know, than Eddie needed him, which is the big –
Yeah. Yep. That's the part that's so frustrating is that Eddie is acting like this guy was responsible for saving him. And I'm like, dude, it's just depressing. Like, I'm sure a million people listening right now, because I have a million listeners. I don't know if you knew that, but obviously
I had heard that somewhere.
Are just like, yeah, I know this guy. And there's something so inevitable about it that's just really depressing. It kind of reminds me of some characters from The Wire that you watch going down this path and you know where it's headed and there's like no avoiding it and yet you keep hoping that somehow they're going to manage to like escape. But
yeah, I mean, but you know what? I'll bet a large portion of your million listeners know this person and love this person and won't let it go because they just – this is somebody that they love and that's – and letting that go and, you know, there are circumstances obviously in which this isn't true. But, you know, letting that person go and just being like, sorry, dude, I'm out is not traditionally something you do to somebody that you love and who loves you, which I'm sure Henry loved Eddie, you know.
I think that when I say that I, like, have no tolerance – I really have gotten lucky in that the people who have done this shit to me have overestimated how important they are to me.
Right.
It has never been somebody who is like really close family, somebody that I have, you know, kind of a history with. It's always somebody who just thinks they're in and now they can start to pull this shit. And I'm like, oh, you picked the wrong person because I am not the one.
But in this case, you know, we're talking about his brother.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, I'm really lucky that it hasn't ever been somebody like this for me because I can say that I have this, like, kind of ironclad standard, but that's really easy to have when it's not somebody who is that close and important to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I've just, you know, and I'm pissed at his mom. What the fuck, lady? Jesus.
And, you know, Henry gets back from Vietnam, you know, starts taking a lot of morphine for the pain.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, and when he was better, they weaned him from the drug, only they didn't do such a good job.
Yeah.
Because when Henry got back to New York, there was still a monkey on his back, and he starts doing heroin. And
he's snorting heroin, which is, snorting's not that bad, whatever. But then he starts using the needle, and they keep getting into these fights about it, in which Henry's like, you're right. I'm terrible. I'll just leave you. You'll never see me again.
And again, I can relate to this so hard.
Yep.
I mean, it's like I know this person, you mm-hmm. know, and I know the feeling, the actions that Eddie has here, which is like, no, shut the fuck up and come back inside. You know what I mean? When even like Roland says, maybe it would be better for both of them if you didn't do that, or if you let them walk. But that's not how people work.
That's not how this operates, yeah. Yep. And there was an earlier moment, too, where he's talking about how his, like, when they were kids, that Eddie gets told that, like, Henry would have been an amazing baseball player or basketball player or football player, even though there's really no evidence to support that, but that he just can't pursue it because, oh, he has to take care of you. Yeah. And that one also really got to me. I'm just like, oh man, to just feel like, well, this is something my mom has a real codependent streak that she's like been able to finally break, but it took a long time. And this was something that as a kid growing up, she heard a lot was, we'd be able to do this and that if it wasn't for you damn kids. And, you know, just really hammering it home that we didn't really want you kids. We didn't, especially my mom was the last and she was a surprise. So that got like hammered home a lot that basically you owe us because we didn't even want you here. And so constantly trying to, like, be worthy of the trouble, you know? And it fucks your head up so bad. And I'm like, you know, just, I'm really lucky. Because people talk about, like, well, you don't want to blame your parents for everything. And I'm like, yeah, but there is some shit that you cannot avoid being fucked up by. When somebody constantly tells you, life would be better if you weren't here. How the fuck do you not internalize that? That's basically what she's saying to Eddie, is that your brother would be better off if you hadn't been born.
Yes.
You know?
Right. And you know, and Eddie, or Henry needs, I keep getting mixed up. Henry needs to, you know, be the one to look after you because look what happened to your sister.
Yep.
It was because of you.
Yep.
You know? So yeah, it's, I mean, you don't not internalize that is the answer to that question. Mm-hmm. It doesn't happen. I think it would be practically impossible. So
yeah, I just like, I totally get why people get frustrated with the whole, like, well, my parents did this and that, because there is a point where I'm like, okay, well, once you know that, then it's on you to do something with that mm-hmm. information. I get that, but you know.
You've got to come to the realization first, though.
Eddie's like not. He seems like he's inching towards that, but he isn't there yet.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And you, it's you know, you're not going to want to do anything. You can't be blamed for not wanting to do anything about like the state of the world if you don't listen to the news or read the news.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like if you don't know, if you have no idea what's really going on around you, or even what's really going on inside you.
Mm-hmm.
Then how can you possibly? How can the onus be on you? I mean, cause that's just victim blaming, really.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, and you know,
and this is why I was kind of frustrated with Roland not like talking to him more about this, because it's so clear to Roland what really happened, and at the end, Eddie is asking for his opinion, and I'm like, dude, you should fucking just tell him. Like, even if it ends up in a fight, so what? You guys are not getting along super great anyway, and literally, what are you gonna do? Split up if you don't agree? No. Both of you are each hooked on the other right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of wanted him to just, like, get real for a second and be like, dude, your life is going to be better without him in it. He fucked you up. But he doesn't. He's just like, I think now is now. And that was then. I'm like, oh, yeah. Super helpful, you fucking useless.
Well, he doesn't care. I mean, it says right here, another man, less pragmatic and more introspective than Roland, might have asked to himself, if not right out loud, why this one? Why this man to start? Mm-hmm. Why a man who seems to promise weakness or strangeness or even outright doom? Mm-hmm. Not only did the gunslinger never ask the question, it never even formulated itself in his mind. Cuthbert would have asked. Cuthbert had questioned everything, had been poisoned with questions, had died with one in his mouth. Now they were gone, all gone. Court's last gunslingers, blah, blah, blah. Goes into some stuff about court, and then it says, so he was the last, and perhaps he had survived because the dark romance in his nature was overset by his practicality and simplicity. Mm-hmm. He understood that only three things mattered: mortality, Ka, and the tower. Those were enough things to think about. So he, like, legitimately doesn't give a fuck about helping him get through this.
No. I'm mad at him.
Yeah.
Let it be known.
At least he didn't drop him into a mine to become a slave of baboons.
The night is young. I wouldn't be surprised. They open that door with the Lady of Shadows, and it's just a fucking, like, yawning chasm, and he's like, oh, perfect, and just shoves him.
Yeah, because Eddie's, you know, you don't have any opinion on what the hell it all means? And he says, it's Ka. It's like, oh, fuck you.
I hate it. I just, like, you know.
It's like those, like you were saying, the Christians, people who tell you, oh, well, everything happens for a reason. God has a plan.
Like, that Go does not help me.
Fuck yourself.
That does not help me. That is one of the number one things you should not say to somebody who has just lost a loved one also. Everything happens for a reason, or they're in a better place now. No.
Yeah, gone.
Don't do it. Just don't, guys. I know that you're trying to think of something to say and that it's awkward and weird and those are words that you've heard a million places and that maybe it'll help. It won't. Just say you're sorry. This sucks. That's all you need to say.
Yep. But
yeah. Roland, you're the worst.
Roland is the worst. And right in the middle of Roland being the worst, he sees something in the distance.
Because he is Superman.
He is Superman. That's right. Except, I mean, I guess there is a website called supermanisadick.com, so.
Is there?
Oh, yeah. Have you never been there?
That's funny.
Oh,
no.
It's beautiful. It's got all the comic book covers from the I don't even know when they were, 40s, 50s, 60s, all the whole, like, history of Superman, when the comic covers, the cover of the book didn't necessarily have anything to do with what was inside it.
Oh, Owen told me about this.
Or at least not much, and it's like they just wanted to sell them, so it's Superman doing things like, you know, they're in space and he's like pulling out Lois's oxygen tank and like crushing her tube.
Oh my god.
Sorry, Lois, you know about me and Lana Lang. That means you're not allowed to live.
What? I thought it was just going to be an entire site dedicated to Zack Snyder's version of Superman, he is apparently a huge dick.
There's a comic book cover with Superman, like, in a desert with, is it Jimmy Olsen and Aquaman? And they're both, like, he's standing over them as they each try to get to a bottle of water and saying that only one of them can get there.
Oh, my God.
Or some shit. It's, like, really ridiculous.
Wow. He sounds more and more like Roland with every
I know, right?
comparison. So, yeah, it takes a while for Eddie to see it, but he finally does. And obviously starts formulating this plan. And it's, like, inevitable, but I really love the fact that Roland, like, could have stopped him. But he's just tired and knows that they have to have this confrontation. And it's like, all right, get it out of your system, kid.
Yeah. And so the door has the words on it, the Lady of Shadows.
Mm-hmm.
And
there's no real description of the door, so I'm assuming it looks the same as Eddie's door looked.
I believe that's what we're meant to believe.
Yeah. I would have kind of liked it if it looked different. But, yeah. You know, to indicate, oh, this one's a real fancy door. When this one was a shitty door, and this one's a little tiny door. Or it has a moon painted on it, so maybe it's a bathroom. But, you know.
Well, anyway, the thing that Eddie, or the thing that Roland knows Eddie is going to do, I cannot keep names straight in the series. I'm having real trouble, you guys. I'm sorry.
You're just overtired.
Yeah, I guess. The thing that Roland knows Eddie is going to do before he does it and could have stopped him from doing is taking one of his guns.
Right.
And he says it was the first time in his life he had allowed one of his weapons to be taken from him without an offer of that weapon having first been made. And so Eddie grabs the gun, thinking he's being all clever, and points it at Roland and is like, open it! Open it!
Yep.
And Gunslinger's like, fuck, just stop being stupid.
Yeah. He's like, this might not be your universe. Never mind where you live.
Like, for all either of us know, the Lady of Shadows might have 8 eyes and 9 arms like Suvia.
I really enjoy the idea of Lady of Shadows being like a god. That would be kind of fun.
Or just an alien.
Or, okay, sure. We can go with that. Because Lady of Shadows sounds like a goddess, you know?
Yeah. I mean, so does Suvia, frankly.
Well, yeah. I assumed that Suvia was a god.
Yeah. But he's like, I'm going with you. I'm going along, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
And he's saying that he, you know, he's like hungry and he wants real food is what he's saying.
Yeah.
But Roland is like, yeah, uh-huh. Food. That's what you're after.
Oh, man, I hate drugs. They're the worst. Just smoke some weed. That's all. I mean, I don't like weed, but a lot of my friends smoke weed, and they're not being crazy. It doesn't seem like it's so bad. And, yeah, they basically just open the door, and that's the end of the chapter. We don't get to see behind it.
Yeah, Eddie says, you just try me, like, because the gunslinger says, what did he say, you know, you stay here. And Eddie's like, you think I don't mean it?
Yeah.
Try me. And gunslinger's like, I think I will. And Eddie's like, I'll shoot you. And he just says, ka, and turns the knob on the door.
He's the worst.
That's where we are now. We're about to start The Lady of Shadows, which I am very excited to see what you think of this. I don't know if you're going to like it or not, but I'm really interested to hear your thoughts.
Okay. Interesting.
You will have opinions. Let me just put it that way.
All right, cool. Well, I wanted to say hi to new patrons, and I wanted to make a couple of announcements.
Announcements.
We don't have any new reviews, but we have a bunch of new patrons. What's up, guys?
What's up, y'all?
So forgive me, there's a couple
of
you that
was really awful. I'm sorry. Jesus Christ. I don't know why I did that.
You just got overexcited. It's okay. It happens. There's a couple people whose names are really unusual, and I'm hoping that I don't completely fuck them up so that they at least recognize the fact that I am recognizing them. But Usainu Adni, John Agnes, Diseth Alvarez, Susan Stacy, Mary DeBuck, Olatunji Nuga,
nice.
Mary Mendoka, Jessica Honickman, Brandon Winters, Emma, Sally, Michelle, Julia, and Melody all became patrons recently. So thank you guys so much.
That was excellent pronunciation on some of those names, Tasha.
You don't know that. You're just saying. You don't see all the jumbles of consonants in front of me that I'm trying to make sense of.
It sounded nice. It sounded right.
And I wanted to remind you guys, if you are a patron, that we're doing the Civil War discussions on Saturday nights at 8 Central Time on Blab. And it's live, and it's been super fun, aside from the spammers who occasionally will show up. And
that sucks.
Yeah, it's kind of hilarious, but also super annoying. There was one guy who was just like kept on saying to vote for Donald Trump, but he said it. He had this weird like catchphrase that was like pump for Trump or something, and it was just really strange, and I was like, that doesn't sound right. And then there was somebody who came in and was just like, show your tits, show your tits, show your tits, show your tits, like over and over again. And another person who kept saying that I am Zoom, like Zoom from the Flash. And he was, like, writing in all caps of this, like, whole paragraph about himself as Zoom, and he kept, like, copy-pasting it over and over again. It was just, okay. It's a really weird spam. But if you look aside from that, it is super fun. And Civil War was really good. I have more problems with it than a lot of people I've talked to, but that's fine. And
so fucking good. I wish I could come on the show to talk about it.
You can, Miles. If you just stop getting your dick wet for a second. God.
First of all, no.
That's fair.
Second of all, it's on Saturday night. I'm busy, man. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm talking about. But yeah, that's like, because poor Owen's schedule is so, like, full of nonsense. That's the only night he's always off. Even Sundays haven't been very reliable for him lately, which it used to be like ironclad. So yeah, we're doing those on Saturdays for patrons. And also, patrons only content right now is Game of Thrones, which has been super fun.
Woo!
And I'm getting a lot of good feedback on that. So if you're not a patron and you're interested in hearing some of that stuff and being involved in it, it's really fun. Check out patreon.com/unspoiled. And you can pledge whatever you like per month. It's up to you. And you get access to all of that stuff and a lot of back catalog. And it's really like more about starting a community of people, which I feel like I'm finally starting to accomplish.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And also,
I think so.
The book club has started officially, finally. I recorded the first episode, which was on World War Z, last Saturday. It was 4 motherfucking hours long.
Not just hours.
Motherfucking hours. Because, yeah, right. Once you pass hour 3, they all turn into motherfuckers. And I thought it was really fun, though. Both me and Owen actually got kind of drunk by the end of it because we were just going at that champagne hard. Nice. But, yeah, it's going to be on iTunes, available for everybody to listen to. I'm going to start a new feed for it. So keep your eyes peeled, because it takes a little bit for iTunes to approve new feeds like that. But it will be available for all. And when I do the recordings live, that's open to everybody also. And the next book that's coming up, it's always going to be the first Saturday of the month. The next one that's coming up is going to be on Fever Dream, the George R. R. Martin vampire novel. So that'll be interesting. I have not, I've heard a lot of good things about it, and I had somebody actually give me the book, but it's in Philly, sadly. So I have been wanting to read it, and that's kind of what the book club's about, is just doing one-shot novels once a month that I want to read but can't really justify starting an entire podcast feed for the one book.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's what's coming up next, and you can come on unspoiledpodcast.com and click on the book club link. And it will bring you to a page where you can use my affiliate links to purchase all the books, and you can see what's coming up next. And if you are going to be shopping on Amazon anyway, you want to use unspoiledpodcast.com/Amazon for your shopping, and I will get a little cut of that, and it's super helpful to me. And I think that's about all I wanted to mention this time. So, Miles, please, announce your plugs. Announce the fact that you're getting hair plugs.
No, my hair is glorious. How dare you? So the first thing I want to say is that you should totally check out the Game of Thrones episodes that we're doing. It's really fun. I'm really enjoying not watching the show, but still getting to talk about it in multiple choice form.
It's so really fun.
It's a good time. If you like Game of Thrones, you should check that out. And if you like Game of Thrones, you should check out my new book that I co-wrote with Stefan Sasse. We are both, he is a current reviewer of Game of Thrones at towerofthehand.com, which I have not written for in some time, but which I sometimes still do write for. Well, that's not true, I guess. I got something published on there recently. So I am still a writer at towerofthehand.com. You should check that website out, but you should also check out this book. I used to review Game of Thrones. Stefan also used to and still does, to paraphrase Mitch Hedberg. But we wrote this book together. It's available for Kindle download on Amazon for $5.99. And what you get for that price is all of our reviews, all of our original reviews, So for me, it's my reviews of every episode from seasons 2, 3, 4, and 5. And for Stefan, it's his reviews of every episode in seasons 3, 4, and 5. And then you also get our exchanges, kind of. It's a two-person round table where Stefan and I, after season 5, look back on the series as a whole and go through it episode by episode and talk about what we liked and what we didn't like and what works looking back and what doesn't work looking back and, you know, how what we believed at the time has changed and vice versa. Mm-hmm. So it's a really – I am going to be so bold as to say it's a very interesting and entertaining read, I hope. I tried to be funny and entertaining in those exchanges, so, and in the reviews as well. So check that out. Again, it's called – I didn't actually say the name of the book because I hate forgetting that part because I didn't choose it. But
it is known, right?
It is known. Seasons 1 through 5, Deconstructed. And that is published by Blue Buddha, which I believe there's a few other books with the title It Is Known. But the one you guys want is Seasons 1 through 5, Deconstructed. Go out and buy it because it's awesome and it would really help me if you did. And also, you should check out the Smash Fiction Podcast, which is my other major project. I really love doing the Smash Fiction Podcast. It's so much fun. Me and some friends of mine get together online, and we host a debate about who would win in a fight, or, you know, who would romance.
Waldo.
that's the next one, is who could escape from Boba Fett, Waldo, or Carmen Sandiego. That's our upcoming episode. Our most recent episode was who would win in an archery contest, a cross-dimensional archery contest held by King Joffrey on his name day. And the archers in question are Hawkeye, Merida from Brave, Legolas, and the Disney Fox version of Robin Hood. So it's that kind of shit. We do all kinds of weird stuff. We have our back catalog. I was looking over it today. It's fucking ridiculous. Ash Ketchum from Pokemon versus Jurassic Park.
Oh, my God.
Carrie versus Matilda.
Ooh, I like that one.
Yeah, right? One of my personal favorites, Iago from Othello trying to break up Ron and Hermione. That was our Valentine's Day episode. It's super fun. It's a comedy show, so it's all about the jokes, less about the result. But the results do occur. There's two people usually on each side, with one person being the impartial judge. And you can find that on Libsyn if you don't have iTunes. If you do have iTunes, it is on iTunes. Search for Smash Fiction in iTunes Store. But on Libsyn, it is smashfiction.libsyn.com. You can also find it on Facebook and on Twitter at SmashFicPodcast, and also on Tumblr, I believe. And, yeah, we accept contributions. Not contributions. We accept ideas for mashups. We love talking to the people who listen to the show and doing fan suggestions. So we're trying to build our own little community around Smash Fiction. We haven't been going in nearly as long as Natasha here has. But we're getting something going here, guys. And now is the time to jump on board. If you want to get in on this
in the ground level.
If you want to get in on the Smash Fiction bandwagon. So 3 years from now, nobody will think you're just you're a trend follower. Now's the time.
Anyway, I liked them before they were cool.
That was a really long way of saying that you guys should all check out my podcast if you like hearing me talk. So there you go.
And I'm going to be on one of them soon, guys.
You are.
So that's going to be fun. We'll see how that goes. It's going to be me and Miles are going to be teamed up with each other.
That's right.
So
we will be arguing to determine why Daenerys Targaryen could totally not take over Mordor or conquer it.
No way could she do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. So, yeah. Thank you, Miles.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to plug my bullshit. I appreciate it.
And I hope that all of you guys have been enjoying the show. If you have, please, please leave a review on iTunes. It's super, super helpful to me because it helps me get new listeners. So even if you're not a patron or you can't become a patron and you still want to help me grow, leaving reviews leads me to discovering new patrons, which is, you know, my life's blood. This is just kind of a gross way to say that, but it's true. So I think that's about it. Thank you, Miles, again for being here. It's a wrap. And we will see you next week with a new episode. Bye, guys.
Peace.